If the record numbers of people participating in early voting this year are any indication, we could see a major turnout for Election Day tomorrow. But here at The Takeaway, we've also been focusing on another segment of Americans, non-voters. Back in August, we devoted a whole show to people who don't, can't, or won't vote.
I am a highly successful taxpaying citizen, 38 years old, and I have never even registered to vote. I don't identify either party is working on my behalf.
I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. I could find a party who supported the views as I see them, then I would vote.
What would make me return to the polls? How about some honesty? How about a modicum of morality?
The reason I don't vote is because I am so overly inundated with politics on a daily level that I have completely lost interest and would rather live my life and get on with it.
Americans do have a bad track record of showing up during midterm elections. In 2014, just 36% of those eligible voted, and that was the lowest turnout in 70 years. But this year, party leaders on both sides have been leaning on political heavy hitters, hoping to energize as much of the electorate as they can. Former First Lady Michelle Obama spoke at a rally in Las Vegas last month.
I get it. I get being busy. And I definitely get feeling frustrated. Because believe me, I am frustrated too. But here's the problem. While some folks are frustrated and tuned out and staying home on election day, trust me, other folks are showing up. Democracy continues with or without you.
And Vice President Mike Pence was in Georgia last week with a similar message.
I want you to decide right here, right now, if you haven't already done it, that you are going to vote. Remember, these elections are won by the people that show up. Friends don't let friends vote alone. Go out and find a family member, a neighbor, at worship, at work, and just, you know, grab them by the elbow and ask them, have you voted yet? And if they haven't, make sure they get to the polls before they close on election day.
And it's true that in a democratically elected government where power is decided by the people, there are consequences when those people are disengaged. And it's an argument that Roxane Gay, an associate professor at Purdue University and contributing opinion writer for The New York Times, makes in a new op-ed. And she joins us now. Roxane, it's always great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tanzina. It's great to be here.
So what led you to write the piece? You start this piece with an anecdote. Could you share that anecdote with our audience?
Yeah, I was at the University of Milwaukee. During the Q&A, a young woman who is actually a community activist in Milwaukee and does quite a lot of work in terms of immigration and sexuality and class, asked me a question about disillusionment and voting. And I really understood her question, but as I told her a lot of what I wrote in my op-ed, because I just recognize that we're dealing with a really difficult time and a dangerous time for the most vulnerable among us. And we have a very flawed electoral system right now, but because it's flawed doesn't mean we give up on it and do nothing. And so I was just really motivated to say something to try and at least get some of these disillusioned voters to get off their asses and get to the polls on Tuesday.
And in particular, I'm wondering, are you talking about disillusioned voters who happen to be younger or disillusioned voters across the board? We actually did a show, an entire episode on different kinds of people who don't vote or can't vote or won't vote. So who was the audience, you think, for this message?
Anyone who's disillusioned. It was not relegated to a specific age group. I'm just deeply concerned with people who are disillusioned and think that not voting is an appropriate response to that disillusionment. Action is what always helps me when I'm feeling disillusioned. And quite frankly, right now, I am feeling incredibly disillusioned given everything that's going on. And I just can't do nothing.
It's interesting because Bree Newsom, who I'm sure you know, she says, you know, she feels like she was talking about the civil rights generation, sort of looking at comparing that to today. And one of the things that stuck with me was when she said, I feel like the civil rights generation, and I'm quoting here, because they were so violently barred from voting, better understood both inherent power of the ballot and the reality of how power functions. They knew they needed to secure vote and directly challenge white power structure at once. No choice. Do you think that she's right there? Do you think that the disillusionment is just a lack of understanding about how the power structure in the United States really works?
For some disillusioned voters, absolutely. But for other disillusioned voters, they very well know the sacrifices that were made to give women and people of color the right to vote, and they just don't care. And that's a very painful thing to confront. But I agree with what Bree said. I think that it's easier to appreciate the power of something when you had to fight for it than it is when it's something that you were given.
Mm. I mean, how are we supposed to get through to a disillusioned or apathetic voter? I mean, do we keep focusing on that group and saying, you should do this, you should do this? Or how do you even try to change the mindset behind that behavior?
I think that we keep reminding them of what's at stake. I think that many of them have created some intellectual distance between their lack of motivation to vote and the very real atrocities that this country is facing and that the most vulnerable Americans are facing. And so I think when you have that distance, it's up to us to close it for them if they won't do it for themselves.
There are lots of people who will say everything from, you know, they feel disillusioned by the process. They feel disillusioned by attempts at voter suppression. They feel disillusioned with the outcome. You know, they may not be happy with the outcome, and therefore they don't want to participate in that. Is there any empathy from your end for any of those reasons?
Oh, I have a lot of empathy for, you know, any perspective that someone has, but I have more empathy for people who are being disenfranchised and who are being denied their birthright citizenship and who are being murdered. You know what I mean? Like, that's sad. Like, I understand that. But like, as a Black woman in this country, I feel wildly disillusioned about all of the things that matter to me that are not being addressed by this government, but I'm still going to vote. And I'm not particularly rah, rah, rah. You know, I'm not the most positive person in the world. I still feel this responsibility. And so I think that at some point, and I wrote this in the op-ed, you have to get over yourself a little bit and recognize that sometimes we have to make decisions for the greater good. The reality is that we are living in a world with other people. We share this planet and this country with other people. And the better we are to each other, the better everything is because, you know, it just many hands make light work.
I don't think there's ever been a midterm more interesting than this one.
Not in my lifetime, and certainly not in my voting. I started voting in 1992, and this is by far the most interesting midterm election and the one with the most at stake.
I have to say, I've been voting for around the same time, and I would have to say I agree. Roxane Gay is an associate professor at Purdue University and author of Hunger and a contributing writer for The New York Times. Roxane, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.